Welcome to Radio EcoShock. I'm your host, Alex Smith. First, I want to hit a couple of the highlights from last week's new report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC. This is the second working group looking at the impacts we are already feeling from global warming and predicting who gets hurt in the future. That turns out to be up to 30% of all species going extinct, including coral reefs, and billions of humans running out of food and water. I won't try to duplicate the whole report. You can find lots in the newspapers and on Google News. What they don't cover so well is the censorship and just plain government bumbling that watered down the results of thousands of scientific studies. The scientists spend 5 years gathering 29,000 data sets, analyzing them all, and then in the last 4 days, a slew of government bureaucrats arrived to dump important results in all-night sessions of wrangling by representatives from big polluters like the United States and China. It's criminal, really, what happens to the science. Do we need a whole new system to watch over the progress of climate change and human-induced catastrophe? We'll hear from one man with a new idea. First, let's hear a couple of minutes from the official press conference from the co-chair of Working Group 2, Martin Perry.
This report is called Climate Change Impacts, Vulnerability, and Adaptation. Climate Change 2007. It's the second of three reports by the IPCC. As you probably know, Working Group 1 was approved a month ago in Paris. Some of you are probably there. This is Working Group 2 on impacts, and Working Group 3 is in Bangkok in a month's time. And we've just surfaced from 4 days and last night, and we have approval of our document, and we literally meet in an hour's time with clean copy. They firstly confirmed that on all continents there's a regional signal. Regional climate change is affecting animals, plants and so on. And secondly, they've concluded that at the global level, this is doing the same. That's an important conclusion, really, because for the first time, we're no longer arm-waving with models. This might happen, right? This is what we call empirical information on the ground. We can measure it. This is the sort of thing that is common around the world, but this is the first time that statistically the case has been proven. 29,000 data sets this group used, and more than 90% of them are in the direction that would be expected for climate change. Here's a glacier high, in Bolivia. On the left-hand side, 1940, you can see the Skeeto. It was the highest skiing field in the Alps. 1982 on the top right, 1996, and the snowfield's gone now. Well, a lot of people were arguing this is, you know, just the regional issue, less snowfall, a precipitation issue. But conclusively now, the IPCC, both one last month and two now, has put this into a world story. Thank you. Let me read out some of the things here. Increased water availability in the moist tropics and high latitudes, where it's already moist. We don't want more of it. And unfortunately, decreasing water availability in the second line and drought in the semi-arid low-lying latitudes is exactly what we don't want. It makes the world much less even, more inequitable. Ecosystems, up to 30% of species facing extinction with 2 to 3 degrees of warming. Corals, we know they're being bleached now. Widespread coral mortality by about 3 degrees. Can you, by the way, see those numbers? 3 degrees, and can you read coral mortality where I'm pointing? Just have to nod. Okay. Food supply. We knew, but now we know much more, how cereal productivity in low latitudes will tend to decrease, even with a small amount of warming. Starting at 1 degree, you see there's a tendency for a decrease already. For high latitudes, the problem areas in terms of emitters, yields likely to increase, because a little bit of warmth doesn't do them any harm. But there is some point somewhere up here that Easterling and his colleagues, Agrawala, in this room, have found this turns down. There's a key point. Globally, we lost the line because our confidence level was too low. You put these two together, and somewhere around about here, 1 or 2 degrees, you get a global downturn in productivity from climate change. Here are our conclusions about the most vulnerable ecosystem, briefly, headlines. Coral reefs, sea ice regions, those ecosystems that are in at the margins, cold tundra and boreal forests, mountain at the high end, and Mediterranean regions, those that are there, you know, these ecosystems or communities, and Fischling and Midgley, they're in this room probably as well, have done an incredible job making some up-to-date statements about these things. So it's marginal ecosystems. Secondly, low-lying coasts, again, places at the margin. Water resources in the middle latitudes because of that previous line. Decreases in water resources in dry areas. Low-latitude agriculture, because any amount of warming is going to decrease yields there. That's exactly what we don't want, isn't it? We've got 500 million hungry people in the world today, according to the FAO. Those numbers are likely to increase as a result of climate change. And particularly, another vulnerability is human health in those areas where adaptive capacity is low, where there's malnutrition, poorly developed health, public health systems. And the next, corals are one of the issues, particularly affected by ocean temperature. But here's another new point, not reported yet in the IPCC and not yet widely reported in science. We've now begun to realize that increasing levels of CO2 in the atmosphere are absorbed into oceans, carbonic, is it, or carbolic acid, one of those two, making for ocean acidification, not the sort of thing that corals want, any shell-forming organism. So an additional impact now, just beginning to be reported in the science literature, are impacts on shell-forming ecosystems, mollusks and so on, in oceans.
Then two reporters point out some of the material that is missing.
Seth Bornstein, Associated Press, for Dr. Perry. In the last 3 or 4 hours of the session, you had at least three scientists file official objections that the SPM was underplaying you some of the science. You took out the very high confidence level in the opening bold, the first bold state, bold-faced remark. You took out several parts of the iconic table, SPM 1 and 2. You took out 9 bullet points in terms of the especially affected areas. These are things you mentioned in your speech but aren't going to be in the SPM. You had people like Cynthia Rosenzweig file an official objection. How can you, is this the, is there a problem in the whole format when you have scientists objecting to the way government officials are editing their document?
Marlo Hood from Agence France-Presse. I'd like to ask a question about the human impact. It seems to me that's one of the elements that became significantly less specific as the drafts evolved, I think specifically of references to the number of people who will be subject to increased water scarcity and to hunger. Is that, are we to infer from that that it was the judgment that those things are less certain than was thought initially? And a related question, there's very little, if any, reference I could find in even the main report to environmental refugees. And I know that, for example, Ivo de Boer is holding a press conference later today to talk specifically about that issue. How is it that that was not more prominent?
How did you read the full report if it hasn't been up? Doesn't matter. Right.
Professional secret.
Yeah. Right. Just sources, you protect them.
The numbers of human lives to be wrecked is cut down like the casualty figures in Iraq, and an important map of what happens for every degree of climate change was just sliced out. Lack of time, they say. 5 years in preparation, and things are dumped because no one can stay awake any longer in an all-night bargaining session. This is the way humans handle the most important crisis in all of our history? Sheer insanity. Fortunately, with little effort, you can get a good picture of what we can expect with each degree of global warming, from a new book coming out by British author Mark Lynas titled 6 Degrees. Just Google Mark Lynas, spelled L-Y-N-A-S, and listen to our interview with Mark on the Radio EcoShock website at www.ecoshock.org. And this being the age of internet leaks, you can also download the original PDF report from the scientists before the government hacks got their hands on it. If Google doesn't find it for you, I'll be posting it in the climate section of ecoshock.org by this Sunday. Look for yourself. See what the real science says. Meanwhile, David Wasdell of the Meridian Project is proposing a brand new institution to help us keep updated on global climate science. He was going to call it the New Manhattan Project, but we're not trying to build a weapon of mass destruction, but a weapon of mass salvation. So he's calling it the Apollo Gaia Project instead. You can Google that to find his video on YouTube, but I'll run it for you here now.
Most of us know about the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report, at least the summary for policymakers of that report that came out at the beginning of February. Now, I was one of the so-called expert reviewers, there's hundreds of us, who had the privilege of looking at the draft of that. In fact, two copies of the draft, 6 months apart. 1,500 pages of text with thousands of references landing on my desk, and people saying, please would you report on this within 2 weeks? And I go, Anyway, I'd seen the drafts, and I'd seen the draft of the summary for policymakers. I was, I don't know quite what I can say politely, astonished at what had been taken out in the final stages of polishing of that document. Just explain what happens. Scientists from all over the world bring together their understanding, argue about what they don't understand, look at the models, and bring together the best possible climate science to understand what is happening to our world system. That goes then through a whole review program and a redrafting program by the scientists. Then in the final stages, intergovernment agents, in other words, agents of all the governments represented in the United Nations and in the United Nations Environment Programme, who are involved in the intergovernmental panel, put their representatives together with some of the scientists to veto what is not acceptable, to weed out stuff that they don't want into the public domain, and the text that comes out is what you think is climate science, is climate science less anything that any government agent wishes to veto or does not wish to see accentuated. Now you can imagine what happens to the science texts when vested interests at national and international level are let loose on attempting to contain information that might damage the national interest or the vested interests of major organisations, industries, or even total income sources to the nation state. So, as I analyse the differences between the final report and the second draft, I found that almost all references to accelerated change, to non-linearity, as we call it, where change gets faster and drives increased feedback, had been taken out. References to feedbacks had been taken out. Certainly references to instability and possible threats in the near future had been damped right down. So what we have is a very conservative, very solid foundation of climate change understanding, but one which has taken off the whole of the current understanding of the threat and the problem and the crisis of the global climate that we now face. The denial of climate change has been the most devastating deception ever perpetrated in human history. And it has been driven by massive economic vested interests. Now, all the material on that and the detailed analysis is in my paper that's looking at the processes of the Intergovernmental Panel. And that's available on the website, and I'm sure you can go and look at it for more detail. It's dynamite. It's devastating. And it's been described as one of the most discouraging documents that has ever been seen. What it means is that we, as the human populace who are at risk from climate change, are being hoodwinked into thinking everything's all right and everything's going to be fine, when it's far from the case. Some of our leading scientists have been saying the situation is so profoundly disturbing that we now need what they described to start with as a Manhattan Project of climate science, to look at these instabilities, to look at the acceleration, to look at the threat that we now face. Well, Manhattan is not a good name. The Manhattan Project, you will probably remember, had to do with creating the first atomic bomb. And Manhattan Island isn't a good name in public space at the moment since 9/11 either. So the Manhattan name has been sloughed off. We're using the word Apollo Gaia, the relationship between the Sun and the Earth. And if you want an Apollo association, it's not to putting a man on the moon, it's to Apollo 13 and the mission that almost went into a catastrophe. Our life support system is under threat. The future of our species is under threat. The sustainability of our whole environment is under threat. Planet Earth, we have a problem. The whole of planet Earth is like that capsule in space, with its whole life system under threat. The whole of planet Earth is like the Houston Control Center trying to make it back into a sustainable, viable future. Every single one of us is involved. So watch this space for the Apollo Gaia Project, where the scientists begin to lead policy, where the understanding of the real feedback dynamics make public news, where the motivation to make a difference becomes absolutely imperative, and where we have to mobilize total global effort to get through a crisis which is unprecedented in human history and probably in the history of most life forms that are currently on this planet. Apollo Gaia is the coordinating envelope, if you like, the umbrella project, which will bring to bear the reality of our climate system and mobilize the task ahead. It's going to be tough. Most of us living today will not know whether we succeed in damping runaway climate change. That will take decades to work through, maybe centuries. But if we are successful, then I tell you this, our descendants will look back on this moment where we intervened in the mess we had created and say, that was humanity's finest hour. Thank God they did it.
Frankly, David Wasdell has proposed other giant projects in the past which didn't amount to a lot. I don't see him as the agent which will create an alternative IPCC, especially since only government institutions, so far, have the money to fund all that scientific research and the conferences. But he shows us the real weakness of the IPCC system when it comes to judging our current situation. I'm sure others will call for reform in the process to avoid censorship and the last-minute madness. One final point. Once the third report is released this May, that's it for another 5 years. Come on! New science is popping up practically every week. We're just beginning to understand how the world works. And many top scientists have warned we only have another 5 to 10 years to act, to save our climate as we know it. We can hardly afford to wait another 5 years to get a new report on our situation. Maybe, just maybe, since the planet is threatened with vast changes, most of them quite bad, we could have a full-time staff looking at the science and bringing us updates every month, not every 5 years. When it comes to climate change, the system isn't working, and if we can't change the way we study, report, and act, well, we'll need our Derek Jensen to tell us how to dismantle the industrial economic system before it dismantles life on Earth. The former host of Green Monkey, Zoe Blunt, caught up with Derek here in Vancouver to capture his latest dark thoughts on our future and the activism required to avoid the worst impacts of pollution and climate change. When it comes to deep ecology, Jensen is the philosopher of green despair and resistance. You can find his latest 30-minute interview as a free MP3 download at our website, ecoshock.org. Just choose Greens from our Audio On Demand menu. Personally, I hope it doesn't come to that. Will big governments and big corporations finally act to preserve the rest of the planet? Or will we humans organize in brand new carbon-free ways? Of course, Jensen says such wild hopes are the last remaining barrier, the final stage of denial, before we face our real situation here on the small blue planet. For Radio EcoShock, I'm Alex Smith, and I hope you're enjoying these podcasts. I try to boil down some critical information using audio to reach both sides of the brain. Please feel free to pass them on or tell your friends to find EcoShock News podcast on iTunes or on the main page of ecoshock.org.
We're doo-doo when the water is gone.